Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.
Ahoy!
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 Ahoy! Oh, there you are.
Ruffling your hair there. The knuckles. Knuckles on the top there.
Hello. Ow! Ow!
Sorry.
Ow!
Sorry.
I haven't got a lot of hair up there. Remember, the knuckles are... And those rings, since when did you have such...
Yes, aren't
such
they lovely?
Crusty rings. Well,
that was one of the many little accoutrements that I picked up when I was in Algiers.
An influencer.
Yeah, no.
Oh, I see.
Algiers.
I thought you were maybe as an influencer.
Do you remember way back in the glug 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 past?
This is
going back as far as the first lockdown.
Gosh, I remember that.
The first
Algiers.
Lockdown. Yes, I was in Algiers.
Oh, yes.
And
stuck in
there was a lovely little jeweller there in the hotel.
Yes.
Moroccan chaps from a town called Tiznit in the south of Morocco, where they make beautiful silver jewellery. Anyway, I picked up this particular one, the sort of double-headed snake there, that one. That's one of my favourites.
Yes.
This one of the skull.
Oh, with its... Yes. Oh, but its eyes.
The skull with the ruby eyes as well. And
a lot of ruby eyes going on.
And this lovely one of a cannabis leaf, which I think is very, very cool. Do you see that?
Yes.
Anyway, yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
I like
my
the
way
Pope.
Of saying
the Pope
sorry.
Smokes dope. All right, yes. Oh. That's good. That rhymes.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway. So how did you get here?
Yes. I've just got to be careful how I say this. I came in a kayak, Martin. I feel a little bit nervous about that because I think a kayak was originally... I think that might be a sort of Native American boat or something.
Yes, I think maybe you've culturally appropriated
that. I think I might have culturally...
I don't think you should be doing that.
Yes, exactly.
Go. Put that kayak away.
A little bit nervous. Of course, if I've got that wrong and a kayak isn't a Native American boat, that's even worse because I've...
What's even worse? You've stolen it for your own benefit. You're beneath contempt, and you don't even know where you stole it from.
I just don't know. I mean, I just feel completely at sea.
Bereft. At sea. Well, nice.
Martin, what's your...
Shanks's pony.
Shanks's
pony.
Pony.
I've walked.
Lovely.
I've walked. I set off yesterday evening.
You've walked across the bay to me.
Well, I came over the land.
Oh, I see.
I came over the land.
And then you waded.
You see the sand dune behind us?
Yes, I do, yes. Yeah, the sand dune.
Well, no, I was... In my mind, we're standing on a jetty.
Oh, okay. Yes, makes sense.
On a jetty. Yeah. Behind us, the sand dunes and quite a lot of, sort of mangroves. A lot of mosquitoes, I think, about. Anyway, I've come on Shanks's pony. These hefty brogues have seen me here. I landed at I don't even know what land we're in. The land of time ghost.
The land?
I was about to make up an elaborate name in a sort of foreign language. But even that's just a horrible thing to do.
I'll tell you what land.
Horrible.
I'll tell you what land we're in.
Tell me.
What we are is we are in a cultural desert. Now, we're in a
cultural no man's land.
We're
cultural minefield.
Yes, we're in a cultural minefield. Actually, I think we are in a minefield.
Yes, I think we are.
Because speaking of cultural appropriation, something I found very hard to say, by the way.
I think
it's getting harder and harder to pronounce cultural appropriation. No, I still can't do it.
Oh, yes. It's the appropriation. You've got a double. Do a lot of PR going on in there, appropriately enough.
Appropriately, yes. So, I don't know if you saw this story. It's all the rage at the moment. But there's been a big hoo-ha in the culinary arts.
Oh, nice.
Culinary arts? Culinary.
culinary. I quite like it.
Basically, people are saying that you shouldn't cook dishes that are not part of your culture. Discuss. Isn't that interesting?
It's proper balls out lunacy. It's lunacy. This is lunacy. This is somebody. There's a very simple way of just working out where the horizon is on these arguments.
Yes.
What you have to say is, who does this benefit?
Right.
What benefit? What are they after here? What are you trying to achieve? And if you were to achieve it, whom would it benefit?
Yes, very good.
The answer to this is, what are you trying to achieve here? You're trying to annoy the largest volume of people you possibly can. To what benefit? None. None at all. None. It benefits us nothing. This is an argument literally from people who are wanting to start a fight, I think.
Well, don't get me wrong. that's where I started out with it as well. But then I came across, I've been reading a few articles, because this really did kick off this week. I mean, I think it's...
Yes.
There was a couple of... I think BBC Good Food have decided to completely launch a review of their entire recipe archive and winnow out... anything that that might be deemed, culturally insensitive. So for example, Asian salad.
Yes.
You shouldn't call something an Asian salad.
Why, in the name of all that is sentient and holy, not? Why not? Sorry. Was that a tone of anger?
Because
befuddled fury in my voice there.
Do you want me to give you some examples?
Yes. Give me some examples, because I can tell that you have at least found purchase on this argument. I'm not sure you're wholly persuaded by it, but you've at least found purchase. I'm not finding purchase on this at all.
Yes,
I'm literally slip-sliding all over the place there.
That's what I'm trying to understand the argument. There's always a germ of something in these things. There's always something. There is a point. But for example, Greg Wallace and John Sherrod, judges of MasterChef, they were criticised for, and this is a new word to me, but I think it's quite funny, white-splaining.
White-splaining. Yes.
This is so wrong, surely. But anyway, how to make chicken rendang to a Malaysian-born contestant. Now,
Did the Malaysian-born contestant know how to cook a chicken rendang? Because there's something implicitly racist in that, because they are assuming that just because he's Malaysian-born, therefore he's fully steeped in every last technique of rendang rendering. I mean, if the person didn't know how to cook a chicken rendang, do you see what I mean? I just think this is sort of balls. I think it's balls. We've all got to go back to being human beings and actually being people who all live on the same planet and can actually have a healthy discourse about whatever it is we want to talk about and eat whatever it is we want to eat. And I don't know, our children, when they were 5 and 6 and 7, used to fight over what was theirs. Oh, it's mine, that's mine. Oh, Lord. And you just think, as a grown-up, you'd think, oh, for God's sake, you two. Don't you understand? I feel a very similar, very similar sentiment.
Britain, Malaysia, calm down.
Just grow
calm
the
down.
Hell up.
It's Malaysia's curry. Now, Britain... Britain, by all means, it's Malaysia's curry, but Malaysia, please share your curry with Britain.
Share your curry with
One of the things I love about this as a topic is I feel this is just such gold with you, Martin. I just feel like we've hit your sweet spot, but I just want to go a little bit further.
Yes.
Okay, right. So It is a bit strange, isn't it? It's a bit strange. The idea of cultural appropriation in food is a little... It's a little odd. But I want to give you the example now of a friend of mine. I remember really clearly at university when I was... this would be about 1988. Okay. So he'd been in his gap year and he'd been to, I think, Lebanon.
Yes.
And he came back to university and... He was wearing one of those towels around his head.
Yes, I
do you remember people at university used to do that in
The sort of thing Yasser Arafat used to wear, you know. Those is that what you mean? Those kind of... People would wear them as scarves as well, quite a lot.
Well, my friend, he was wearing one of those. I went around for coffee, you know, as you do, a cup of instant coffee. Went to his room, he was sitting there sort of cross-legged on the bed. I said, what's that you got on your head? He said, well, I went to the Lebanon. I was really impressed. I thought, wow, you have really travelled. You've gone... It was sort of... I found it irresistibly funny at the time. As well as being impressed, there was something that made me really, really want to laugh. There was like a little bubble of laughter inside me that I just couldn't... Yes. I still find it hard to suppress. When I think about him sitting in his sort of student room with a hobnob and a cup of coffee in a really crap mug his mum let him take from home and a sort of home knitted jumper and a keffiyeh on his head. I just found it very, very funny.
But slightly touching as well, because he will have wanted... He was so proud of the fact he'd been to the Lebanon, and he was so... in love with the culture of the Lebanon insofar as he'd interfaced with it, and he wanted to carry that and identify with his, you know, and broadcast his love of a culture that he'd scratched the surface of. And in a way, that's a lovely thing. It's a sort of soft... It's a soft power, you might say. It's how we all expand our minds and reach out to other cultures. And we say it's a bit like swapping photographs on Christmas Day between the troops.
And it is. And the last person we should be wanting to sort of string up on the outskirts of town is this poor student who'd
poor fellow with his pot noodle.
But that is the symbol,
Hamas.
Yeah, of Hamas and the PLO. That is a really packed symbol, you know, and to wear that in a completely different context, you know, the context being slightly showing off to me over coffee. That's what I think why part of me is sort of embarrassed and wants to embarrassed on, not really on his behalf, but on our collective behalves, on behalf of all 18-year-olds.
Yes.
And I suppose that's what I'm sort of getting at, is that now, with the case of the keffiyeh, you can buy those anywhere in the Middle East. You know, you can buy that anywhere. You could buy that in a souk in... we talked about the United Arab Emirates. You could buy one there in the souk. And if you wore it, though, it speaks to the struggle of the people of Palestine. And I guess... If things are done respectfully, I think it's all right, isn't it? And I think he was being respectful, and I think we would applaud his sort of youthful enthusiasm, wouldn't we, really? But that's cultural appropriation, isn't it? Isn't that taking something...
But it is, but I think appropriation is a very, very strong word, actually. I think things can be adopted and... You know, and adapted as well, in fact, between cultures in a way that is loving, respectful, and it's a natural part. You know, either we are looking at a new multicultural world, which of course is where we are headed, or we're not. The steps of getting towards a multicultural world are going to involve all kinds of different mixtures. You know, if we don't learn to be a little bit more open-handed, a bit more generous, then the process of multiculturalism is going to be a very, very thorny and bumpy and unpleasant one.
I understand, except that is the people who are being asked to share are the ones that haven't got much in the first place. They're the ones that we're asking to share, aren't we? So we talked about, you know, my friend with the, my friend wearing the sort of Yasser Arafat type scarf.
Okay, yes.
Kaviar. Fashion. Here we go. I remember, again, I'm sort of fast-forwarding a few years at university now to the sort of early 90s, maybe just after university. And I tell you, a dress that was really, really popular for young women to wear was the... I'm going to be very bad at describing these dresses, but they're made of silk. They don't really have arms. They don't really have sleeves. They're cut quite short to... the top of your arm. They're very tight fitting. They're made of silk, often patterned silk.
Very I remember.
Beautiful dresses. I would call them, I don't know what I'd call them. They're called like Mandarin gowns or something like that.
Mandarin gowns sounds very, very appropriate.
I think.
Doesn't it?
Now, here's the interesting thing. What do you know about those gowns? Is that okay to wear that now? Because that's an interesting thing. My belief is that those gowns are a Chinese dress that were actually worn by the upper classes in China, I believe. So this is an interesting... So, for example, if wearing a gown like that would mean a lot if you were Chinese, let's say. It would.
I suppose if it's made of woven silk, I suppose, I suppose it does. And if it's... Yes, I mean, that does. I mean, it's a...
Riddle me this. Is it okay now to wear a dress like that? Is that okay to wear...
Is it... I'm going to ask a question in an answer to yours. Is it okay to care about that? I mean, is it okay to make a fuss about that? I mean, maybe making a fuss is a bit too strong, but... I mean, I don't know. I mean, there are some robes of office, I suppose. I mean, it'd be a bit strange if people went around dressed as the Archbishop of Canterbury, I suppose, you know, with sort of chasuble and a mitre and a crook, you know, and everybody just went around with a dog collar or, you know, that would be a curious, you know, to get all those beautiful silken robes and, you know, sort of a dalmatic over the top. I mean, it would just be... I think that would be curious and possibly a bit disrespectful.
Right.
I mean, so therefore, if I would think that was odd, I suppose maybe therefore there's some clothing. I mean, you know, there's some clothing that symbolises, you know, if you wander around with a big pointy white hood, that would also be a despicable, even if for whatever reason, that would be a despicable thing to wear. I mean, there are some clothing choices that are off limits for reasons of taste, but for reasons of taste, I don't really know.
It's
I think people have to take a step back from this and think about it in a greater context. Because where, for example, in music, what would you say to what about some of my some fabulous music from the late 70s? The Police,
Zenyatta Mondatta,
that's the one, Zenyatta Mondatta, where you've got the absolutely peerless Stuart Copeland. Some of his drumming is simply off the chart. He's such a very clever fellow, and he's forever trying to think of new ways of populating the 4/4 bar. And he's studied rhythms from all over the world in order to try and introduce something interesting, you know. Yes, of course, he would have looked at African rhythms. He'd have looked at rhythms in every possible context. He's looked at jazz, he's looked at rhythm and blues, and he's crafted this extraordinary, lovely new sound world for us through his study, through his, I think, very enlightened and open-minded study of different cultural drumming styles. Then you've got a sort of faint reggae style that comes through the guitar as well. And even actually Sting, if one's entirely honest, sings in what one might think, you know, he sings in a sort... He puts on an accent.
Oh, you're right. I've never noticed that before. He does.
You might say, well, he's from Tyneside, of course. Of course, he can say, I feel so low, but...
Oh, you're right.
I think there's a sort of flavour that creeps in there. I loved it at the time. I still love it now. You know, and I don't think it was done in an appropriative way. I think it was very much, it was a sort of homage. A homage.
Yeah. Well, this is the
and
thing.
And I think,
isn't it about? Isn't it? Maybe. Maybe it's just about respect. You know. Maybe it's just if you have
respect
for, you know, respect for the culture that you are. Again, I think you're right. I think appropriation is not really the right word. Let's call it borrowing rather than stealing. The culture that you're
possibly honouring. We're honouring.
If there's respect, then it feels like it's not to be. It's not, you know. But how do you? It's that borderline, isn't it? I feel like I don't know if I would wear a PLO headdress. I'm just going to come out with that.
No,
I just don't know
if I would wear a PLO headdress.
If I were a girl,
or
frankly, just in a bit of downtime, I would definitely wear one of those Mandarin gowns. Isn't
yes.
it? Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Beautiful.
Hate the thought of...
Absolutely beautiful.
Hate the thought of...
I think it'd be monstrous. I genuinely think that would be monstrous, and it would be an act of terrible, thoughtless aggression if somebody were to take that the wrong way and demand or even sort of tear it off somebody. Mm. I think that would be a monstrous act. I think I'll be perfectly frank with you, Craig. I don't believe in my life I've ever thought it was a particularly good idea to stick a sort of moustache. I was genuinely about to call it a Pedro moustache because that's what the joke shop I used to see them in. They called them Pedro moustaches.
Times have changed, Martin. Times have changed.
They have. Yes, they certainly have. But one of those moustaches, I can't even... Can you imagine trying to call it that now? Anyway, sticking a little moustache on and putting a plastic sombrero on my head. I don't think that is anything I would ever actually have done, but... I wouldn't have been offended by it a number of years ago, whereas now I would probably prefer... I would just prefer not even to know about it, I think, just for fear... Not that it offends me at all, but it would just feel sort of upsetting because it's got quite a lot of baggage attached to it now, hasn't it?
Yes, and as for the village people, I think they'd be sort of run out of town, wouldn't they? I mean,
it's oh, absolutely
just
right.
Of, I mean, to go in a sort of...
But I...
I mean, I think he was...
I don't think he was even...
He was not even Native American, the guy in the Village People. Wasn't he sort of Puerto Rican or something?
I
mean...
Oh, I don't know.
It's just horrendous, isn't it? It's horrendous. I think we agree that there's a line. We've just got absolutely no idea where it is.
But the other thing was, before we were sensitive about these things, we'd eaten of the fruit whereof we were commanded that we should not eat, it was fun. We thought it was hilarious. We meant no harm by it. It was great fun. And life was colourful and people laughed. Do you remember that? When people used to laugh. Oh, there, I just heard you laughing. It's like music to my ears. One hears it so rarely now. One hears laughter. And stories. Do you remember stories? Do you remember when people used to make films that had lovely stories? Sometimes they'd be love stories. And it was perfectly acceptable in the olden days for people to sort of fall in love and be sort of romantic. And it wasn't thought to be exploitative or terribly abusive or microsexual aggression. Or it was just somebody falling in love with somebody. And yes, maybe... Therefore, in the process of falling out, one of them had to make quite a bold move to try and seduce the other.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is that's a horrible thing these days. Horrible. Horrible. Simply despicable. The very thought of it makes me... I literally want to be sick in my mouth. Oh, bro! He just asked that girl out for a drink. Oh, it's just awful.
Well, Martin, speaking of stories and films and romantic stories, what did you did you catch the Oscars? What did you think of the Oscars?
Where do we even begin with the Oscars of 2021? I didn't watch them. No, I didn't.
Well, I mean, it was quite long. I'll tell you that. I did watch.
When is it ever not?
I did. Well, it's never been as long as it was this year, Craig. We've reached a new. Wow. I mean, they actually sort of encouraged people to make longer speeches this year. I mean, it really was. Quite something. Highlights.
Where was it held?
It was held? It was held, interesting, you know, good question to ask. In Los Angeles, as it always is, but rather than, you know, this year, the I think it's called Grand, the railway station, is it called Grand Central? Central.
Because they used to hold
it in Los Angeles.
They used to hold it at, and again, I'm not sure I want to say this, but I think it was called the Chinese Theatre, wasn't it?
Was it ever held? Yeah, Grauman's Chinese Theatre. I'm sure it has been held.
I think
held
it was
there.
Called the Chinese Theatre. Let's speak of that no more. Let us consign the whole of Oscars and all of film history to the bin.
Yes, he doesn't sound very Chinese, does he, Mr. Grauman?
Hateful, no. It's monstrous.
Yes, it was. Awful. So this year at the whatever the train station in Los Angeles is called, a beautiful, beautiful building.
They held it in the train station?
Yes, they did, yeah. It's really, really quite something architecturally. Beautiful. And they... the big thing, I think, was everyone was expecting Chadwick Boseman to win for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, the best actor, and it went to Anthony Hopkins, who wasn't... Yes. Who was... Nobody was thinking that anybody but Chad Boseman could win that award. So I think they even reordered... You know, it's always Best Picture last. Well, they actually put Best Actor last, I think, so they could run some sort of... I mean, obviously, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing within the Academy, but... the idea was that it moved that to the end because they wanted to, you know, have this, you know, wonderful sort of feel good at the moment, a feel good thing for Chad Boseman at the end. Of course, Anthony Hopkins won, and because it was about, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the morning, and he's 83, he's on holiday in Wales. He was nowhere to be seen. Basically, I think nobody else on that list expected to come even close, and
that's quite an upset.
That's quite an upset. So Anthony Hopkins, the oldest
ever
actor to win that award.
Goodness.
And the film, did you see the film The Father, the film is called, did you catch that one?
It's a very powerful, really? Uncomfortable film. Yes. But absolutely. Oh,
that sounds like you actually have seen it.
Not at all.
Read a review.
Oh, and Olivia Colman
yes.
also delivers a very, very painful, very visceral and real performance, very understated in her usual way.
It's uncanny. No, you've not seen it. No. So he plays... a
wonderful, irascible man wrestling with old age, dementia.
I mean, it really is...
A sort of impotent fury against the world, but also a man maybe finding peace, maybe.
Yes, and then...
It's a very engaging performance.
It was a very engaging performance.
Not seen it, no.
And then there's Daniel Kaluuya's speech. That was sort of interesting. Yes. So he...
what did he say?
Basically, he was sort of calling time's up on everyone there. You know, we've got to, you know, we all have to get to work. We all have to, you know, make changes within this industry. That was quite sort of...
I see we've all got to get to work because it's kind of 5 a.m.
No.
I thought that's what he was saying. Oh, God, we've all had nights like that.
Yes, no, he was talking about the fact that, you know, I guess that there's still a big disparity within the industry and, you know, more needs to be done and all the rest of it. And then I think he sort of thought, oh, I've got a bit too serious, because then he started to... I really don't know what happened, because it was something very odd then took place. I think, like I say, he sort of thought, oh, I've overshot slightly. I've gone too serious. He started saying, you know, but it's a party, you know, and we're all really lucky to be alive. And then he said something really weird, like, my mum had sex with my dad and then had me. I mean, it's literally started to... He kind of had... A weird sort of fridge magnet Tourette's. You know when you get those... if you imagine, you know, when you got those poems on sticky fridge magnets and you can make weird poems. You see people make them out on their fridge.
Oh, yes.
It was
like
that happened in his brain with all the various Oscar speeches he'd thought about making. And, and somehow...
And he ended up doing a sort of heads, bodies and legs.
Yes, exactly.
Of all of
somehow
them.
Somehow he managed... He just went into this weird riff that honestly made it genuinely seem like he'd lost his mind. And his mother was there, you know, on Zoom with her head
slightly
in her
hand. Slightly embarrassed about his...
Absolutely mortified. His sister mortified.
My mum had sex with my dad.
Really quite something. But
Who else won things? Who? I should have checked all of this before we spoke, of course.
No Man's Land, that film, Frances Dormand. Yes, she made some. She made some pretty.
She
howled like a wolf
cannon,
at one
she?
Point.
She oh, howled good like heavens a wolf. She is. I adore her for her very, very rawness.
Yes.
She's a very raw person, isn't she?
She was being very
raw. Oh!
She did say quite a beautiful thing. She said, after you know, after this ceremony, you have to get together with all the people that you love.
Yes.
And you have to go into cinemas and sit
films.
In the dark and watch all of these.
Every single one of these films.
Every
subjects,
single one of
that.
These films, including all the
wonderful.
Nominated films. At which point everyone watching thought, no,
nice.
I'm not going to do that.
Oh.
I might watch this. I might watch this one that's just won the award.
Yeah,
I'm not
maybe.
Sitting through
maybe,
50,
yeah,
50 movies. Just because they all got nominated. So I think she might have lost the audience.
Just because I've just been told by... Well, imagine she did that when she started howling. Howling like a banshee. That's... It can be a bit scary. Do you remember that wonderful... I mean, dear, wonderful Liz Taylor, when she went to Cannes because she was... She'd been such a stalwart campaigner for AIDS awareness
right,
and
yeah.
money raising. And they interviewed her, and she was very frail then, dear Liz, very frail. And she said, well, we've come here, and we're going to watch this thing, and we're going to make... And she suddenly, everyone was like, lots of money! And she shouted at the very, 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 very top of her voice. And it was sort of endearing and sweet and absolutely bonkers. I mean, really quite scarily.
Speaking of endearingly sweet and absolutely bonkers moments, there was a great part where one of the hosts, they just had this weird kind of pub quiz in the middle of it where they were trying to get people to guess. So they'd play a tune and they'd say, did it win the Oscar or not? You know, so for example, they'd play Purple Rain. Did it win the Oscar or not? And
no, I can say no.
Yes, of course it didn't win the Oscar. You wouldn't have it as a question if it
yes,
had.
Of course.
The answer to the question was this. It was a song from a Spike Lee movie. I think maybe one of the very first Spike Lee movies. Maybe She's Got a Habit or something like that. Anyway,
Mo Better Blues,
something like that. Anyway, Glenn Close sort of very implausibly suddenly not only gets the name of the song but gets the very complicated name of the artist, and the song is called Da Butt. And then the guy, the host says to her, can you do the dance? And she gets up and basically twerks in front of the whole...
in front
of everyone there at the Oscars. Obviously a supremely set up moment. Very funny. Very funny that Glenn Close would know.
Yes.
But again, what's the joke there? The joke is cultural appropriation, isn't it? The joke is Glenn Close would not know the artist and dance of a Spike Lee movie, necessarily. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. And was it allowed that she did?
Was it allowed?
Maybe
it was encouraged
people...
and it was laughed at. These things are all
see,
about...
I don't think people... They've got to make their minds up.
These things are all about context,
no, it's about respect.
They?
It's all about context and respect. And also, it's all about whether or not you like the person. It's done in the Oscars. We like Glenn Close, It's Glenn Close, not Steven Seagal. Had it been Close, but no Seagal. But had it been an actor that no one...
Martin, quickly, before we move on to another topic, as we must, please tell me what your favourite bad Oscar speeches of all time. Who sticks in your mind as having made a particularly bad Oscar speech, apart from Liz Taylor?
Well, I think Kate Winslet's made a couple of corkers in her time, hasn't she? I believe. There have been some very interesting ones, haven't there?
I'm thinking of, there's a great one that I think Matthew McConaughey, I remember, making a very long, emotional speech after he won for... It's the emotional ones I always find slightly excruciating to you.
I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow obviously takes the prize.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously she's the obvious one. I mean, she really was very much the Michael Barrymore of Oscar winners. But there have been some interesting ones. I can't quite remember exactly what happened when La La Land thought they'd won. And they went up and had presumably embarked on a speech. Only then for Warren Beatty then to come over and say, sorry, stop your speech. I imagine that must be one that will live on in the archive, won't it?
Another time I felt really embarrassed was when Roberto Benigni won for Life is Beautiful.
Oh, Life is Beautiful.
Do you remember that?
That's right. He climbed over the chairs. But everyone loved him because he was small and wiry and Italian. And we loved him in that Jim Jarmusch film. So it is a sad and beautiful world. I can't remember what it was. Down by Law, I think.
Oh, I thought that's from one of Roberto Benigni's speeches.
It is Roberto Benigni. Yeah, see. It is a sad and beautiful world. They've got Elon Musk lined up to host Saturday Night Live.
He's not. Tell me about that, Martin. Elon Musk is going to host.
Needless to say, everybody is over the moon about it. They love the idea of Elon Musk being in charge. I suppose because he's fired off some pretty sharp tweets over the years, I think.
Yeah.
And
he's not going to be able to act in the sketches. Doesn't the host have to act in all the sketches?
I'm sure he will.
Elon Musk will be brilliant at the opening monologue, won't he?
He'll have some great material, I'm sure.
He'll have
the best material money can buy.
Yeah, he'll have some good. Is Elon Musk going to be able to act though?
Well, I don't know.
How big is Elon Musk? How tall?
Oh, he's
huge. He's enormous because he looks like
I don't think he looks like he might not be very tall.
He's either tiny, isn't he? Looks enormous, or he's about twice the size of normal.
I think he's going to be 5'8". 5'8".
You think?
I put him at. Yes, I think that's why.
Is that tall or short? I'm just asking for a friend.
5'8", which is...
Tall or short, 5'8"?
It's not short. It's not short, but nor is it tall.
Yeah. Is it average?
I think it's sort of average.
Yeah.
I think it's average, because I think if he's 5'8", that would be why he would want to build rockets.
Yes, you wouldn't want to build rockets if you were tall, would you?
No, good heavens, no. No, he'd be doing something else.
My favourite sort of Elon Musk episode is still... When he called he wanted to design, you know, those poor children.
Oh,
goodness.
That's right.
Horrendous.
And he offered to design an underwater
story.
Exploratory sort of Bond-like device. That's right.
That's right. He wanted to design an underwater sort of submarine to go and get them. And the cavers who were, you know, the potholers who were very busy actually trying to rescue the children on the ground said, I think we're all right for that. And he got ready and called them all pedos.
Yes, that was... that was probably a late-night tweet.
But that suggests to me that he might take himself slightly seriously. Isn't that going to be tricky on
Saturday Night Live?
Because you have to...
Alternately, doesn't take himself takes himself so unseriously that he's prepared to...
Did you see Reggae Gene Page... do you know who Reggae Gene Page is?
No, I don't.
Reggae Gene Page is the star of Bridgerton. Did you see that show?
Oh.
Reggae Gene Page is the star of Bridgerton. He hosted Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Well, a couple of weeks ago. He was very, very good. But, of course, every sketch was making fun of him. Every sketch of
Bridgerton,
yeah, making fun of him in Bridgerton, making fun of him for being English, making fun of him for just about everything they could think of.
Elon Musk is not going to like it. He's going to end up just calling them all terrible things like pedophiles.
He's going to call them all pedos
by the end. He's going to say, "You filthy pedo," and it'll go down. They won't like that, I don't think. I don't think they'll find that funny in May.
Where's Elon Musk from? Is he from Canada?
For some reason, I want to say South Africa.
Oh, yes, I think he might be South African.
I think he might be
South
African.
He's not American, is he? I don't think he's American.
I don't believe he is. I don't believe. Elon Musk, I've never heard him speak, so I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? We'll find out.
Will we not?
When's he hosting?
Will we not?
When's
we'll
the
see
big day?
Colour of his money. I think it's on the 8th of May. The 8th of May. I believe.
Martin, that's two cracking puns.
Listen, come
in
now.
In the course of one podcast.
I'll do.
The 8th of May.
That's very exciting.
Yes,
I look forward to that.
The 8th of May, it is. Oh, I tell you who's going to be the musical guest that night.
Who?
Miley Cyrus.
Oh, not yes. not his...
Twerky.
But why not, what's she called? His wife's a musician.
Oh, I can't. Well, they didn't want her. Not that night. Maybe she's on another night. Maybe that would over-musk it.
That's terrible. Too, yeah, you've really
yes,
you know, fucked it now.
Oh, a bit heavy on the musk. Oh, dear.
Well, Martin, there we are. It's been a very...
Yes.
It's
been quite fun. We talked a lot about the appropriation. Good luck to the editor finding the funny bits. But I think we've certainly got all the mint out of that gum.
Yes, we have. So nothing for it but for me to hop into my... I'm going to call it canoe, not a kayak. I think that's probably...
Oh,
can I get away with that then?
I think a canoe... Well, a canoe...
I'm a canoe.
Yes, well...
I'm a canoe.
Yeah, another canoe. Yes. Well, listen, off you. I'll hold it for you while you...
Thank you so much. It's always bobbing left and right. It's very hard to get that down. That's it. That's right.
I do like your moccasins. Look at those.
Shh, Martin, stop it. Stop it. And my fringed leather jacket. Shush.
Fringe.
And the two lone feathers twisted in the luscious locks. Tied as
yes.
well. Shush! Don't tell anybody.
So what's that? It's sort of an Andean hat.
Shush! Bye!
Right. Okay.
Dahoy!
Dahoy!
You've been listening to Time Ghost. Time Ghost was created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite, and the exec producer was Claire Broughton. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.